Hi, I'm Jeremy Hobson from the Marketplace Morning Report. Mitt Romney is in Jerusalem today raising money for his campaign. President Obama will be in New York for a fundraiser. We are now 99 days away from the election. And one of the key themes of the campaign up to this point has been income inequality. Well, President Obama's former top economic advisor, Larry Summers, says that's not the debate we should be having. Summers would rather focus on inequality of opportunity. As part of our ongoing coverage of wealth and poverty issues, we are joined now by Larry Summers. Good morning.
Glad to be with you, Jeremy.
Well, what do you mean when you say we need to focus on inequality of opportunity in America?
It's probably inevitable, given the global economy, that there's going to be substantial inequality. There's going to be returns to people with extraordinary skills, to extraordinary entrepreneurship. We want people who achieve extraordinary things. If America had more people like Steve Jobs, we'd be an even greater country, but we'd probably have more inequality. But it's much harder to justify the inequalities of opportunity that exist in our country today. We should try to mitigate inequality, but it's imperative that we have a system in which everybody has a fair chance to succeed if that system's going to be legitimate. And unfortunately, we probably have seen the first generation when the linkages between the success of parents and the success of children may actually be getting stronger rather than weaker.
So what's the answer then?
There's no single magic bullet. We've got to do much better at educating those from less advantaged backgrounds. That starts in preschool. It goes to strengthening public schools. It goes to the kind of after-school programs and summer programs that we have. It goes to the quality of the people we draw into the teaching profession. We've got to make sure that everyone's got a fair chance at college and a fair chance at the best college education they can possibly receive. That goes to controlling the growth in tuition costs. That goes to the kind of financial aid that we provide. That goes to admissions policies, which too often reward things that only very fortunate parents can provide with their children. Extensive training in a particular sport or expensive summer programs. It goes to the way we help children prepare for the college admissions process. You know, some of the least diverse classes in the United States are those in some of the SAT prep schools. We need to support the activity of preparing everybody to put their best foot forward when they're applying to college.
Well, do you think the government needs to guarantee every child in America a public education that goes through college the way that they currently can do through high school?
I'm not sure that college as we classically think of it is going to be what every child is going to want to do. Indeed, more than a quarter of students right now don't get all the way through high school without dropping out. But I think we need to have that option more available with less economic burden than has been the case historically.
What about the things, though, that you can't control from Washington, like, for instance, what happens in the home, what the parents do, what the choices that the kid makes?
Not everything is amenable to public policy. The government can't read to a child before the child goes to sleep. What the government can do is assure that working families have opportunities to earn reasonable incomes. It can strive to create an economy in which people who want to work are able to work. It can create an economy in which those who suffer dislocations, whether it's from international trade or whether it's from the economic downturn, receive appropriate assistance. These are all steps that contribute to more equality of opportunity.
And I'm sure that your political opponents on the right would listen to this and say this is more government involvement. Wouldn't a free enterprise system be the best way to ensure that everyone has equality of opportunity?
They probably would make some argument of that kind, but they wouldn't be right. The market left to its own devices is not going to get poor children to college. The market left to its own devices is not going to help those least fortunate communities provide decent public education for their children. The market left to its own devices is going to choose existing businesses over new businesses. There's much that government needs to do to create more equal opportunity.
Well, you were the top economic advisor under President Obama. Do you think that he has done enough? And do you think that you did enough on this front?
I think we took some very important steps. The largest increase in federal financial aid for higher education in the last 40 years was part of the original Economic Recovery Act. The steps to make tax cuts refundable and expand the earned income tax credit, which helps lower income families, strengthen the incentives for individual initiative. We pushed for things that would make a real difference in putting people back to work, like substantial increases in infrastructure investment. And the president didn't get everything that he wanted from the Congress in that regard because the opposition wouldn't permit it, though we did make progress. So there's certainly much, much more to be done. But I think if you look at those steps on college affordability, if you look at the steps that were taken in Race to the Top to strengthen public education, if you look at the steps that were taken to provide tax relief to lower income families, to cushion the blow of the recession through expanding unemployment insurance, President Obama has done more to support equal opportunity than any administration in substantially more than a generation.
Now, all of this ties, of course, into the debate over taxing the rich and whether they should pay a few percent more or less in taxes. Do you think that we can ever come to agreement on that? This is a debate that's been going on for 20 years or so.
I think that what people need to recognize is just this. The top tax rate was 90% when Dwight Eisenhower was president. Top tax rate after Lyndon Johnson's famous 1964 tax cut was 70%. The top tax rate during most of President Reagan's term was 50%. The top tax rate during Bill Clinton's term, when the economy had its greatest boom in the last 40 years, was 39%. It strains credulity to believe that at a time when we've got larger budget deficits than we've ever had before, somehow it will do grievous damage to the economy to restore tax rates not to where they were with President Eisenhower, not to where they were with Presidents Kennedy and Johnson, not even to where they were with President Reagan, but only to where they were with President Clinton. I think that's an elementary kind of judgment about where we need to go as a country in the context of addressing our long-run challenges.
Okay, before I let you go, I think people will be interested to hear your thoughts on a couple of pieces of information about our economy right now. Do you think the housing market is at the bottom?
It's hard to know. It's much closer to the bottom than it was 2 years ago, and the moment will come when there's a turn. I think it's a real possibility if nothing else like developments in Europe disrupts the economy.
How concerned are you with the fiscal cliff?
If nothing is done and massive tax increases and massive spending cuts take place on January 1st, it will have devastating consequences for the economy and make a recession almost inevitable.
Whose fault is it that the European debt crisis is still weighing on the markets week after week after week?
Some of it lies in the original design of the European system. Some of it lies in the fact that European policymakers have not been able to take steps sufficient to get ahead of the problem rather than simply try to manage the problem.
And finally, I know this is something that you've had to look into while you were in the administration, is it time to break up the banks? We've had just scandal after scandal.
It's clear that we need to look at a lot of issues in financial policy, and there are clearly excesses that will need to be addressed. It's far from clear that breaking up the banks is the right solution.
So you wouldn't do that?
I think we got to study all the issues, and certainly what has come out, the continuing scandals around LIBOR, around money laundering, around rogue trading. These are all alarming problems. So I don't think anyone should suppose that we have all financial issues in hand. But I also think it's a mistake to assume that somehow breaking up the banks would be a panacea. You know, the lesson that was drawn from the S&L crisis was that the financial system was excessively fragmented. That was the lesson that was also drawn from the Depression. The other lesson that most experts have drawn from recent experience is that Canada, which has a much more robust system of financial regulation than most other countries, has been a model. But it has a financial system that is heavily consolidated. So I agree with those who are dissatisfied with where we stand with respect to the financial system right now, but I'm not sure that when you analyze it closely, you'll find that breaking it up works so well. After all, if you think about catalysts for the crisis we've just had, Bear Stearns and Lehman were already broken up institutions. They were relatively small relative to the overall economy. They were specialized in investment banking. The remedies that advocates of breakup suggest wouldn't have touched those situations at all. So I do think we need to be careful and thoughtful about finding the right approach. But too often, that translates into a council of complacency or a council of satisfaction with the status quo. And I think that is very much misguided.
You want to go back to Washington if President Obama is reelected?
I'm enjoying my life in Boston, thinking and writing. So I'm very happy doing what I'm doing.
Well, Larry Summers, former Treasury Secretary, former top economic advisor to President Obama, now a professor at Harvard, thank you so much.
Thank you.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.